slow growth, and short-term rental is that for us. We would rather, for now, have a small portfolio that's done very, very well than have, you know, bring on 200 units that are kind of doing okay. Like, sure. We're super, super proud of our metrics right now. So I think we've only got, I think we've got like 13 that are active, and another 10 or 15 that are kind of in the pipeline getting set up.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's been really fun, and I love it, but that's definitely not dipping our toes in.
Are you tired of trying to keep ahead in the rat race, only to have so much of your hard-earned money going to the tax collector? Equity doesn't pay the bills. Retirement savings don't pay you now, and there are only 24 hours in a day to work. The only solution is passive income that pays you 24/7 now, not 40 years from now. From vetted investment opportunities to tax-saving strategies, let John guide you through all the confusion and take control of your financial life in pursuit of financial freedom. So sit back, relax, and welcome to the Wealth and Freedom Nexus.
Hey, welcome back to episode 65 of the WFN podcast. As always, I'm your host, John Rickarn. Now, before you do anything else, be sure to hit that subscribe button on your favorite platform, be it Spotify or iHeart, whatever you're listening to on this. And if you're listening to this on Apple iTunes and have enjoyed the content that I've been putting out since November of 2021, every single Wednesday, be sure to leave a review, as that really helps get the word out so more people can hear this and get exposed to more financial education to hopefully build up their passive income streams to eventually retire from the W-2 lifestyle, so to speak. Now, first, I want to do a shout out to a friend and fellow podcaster, Alpesh of Wealth Matters, where I first heard about this real estate market in 2020. I was actually on a road trip. I recently found Alpesh's podcast, and this is actually episode 28 that I first heard about this area and just hasn't really gained a lot of traction. And you can also check in the show notes. I have a link to the YouTube video of that podcast if you want to check that out. Now, like many operators, you know, be it, you know, Mid-South Homebuyers or Spartan Invest in Alabama that I've also had on the this show, I tend to really take my time, learn about them, check out the market, see if they're growing, and then even, you know, maybe even kind of take a step back, see if the operator is still around in a few years. You know, if the market still is, you know, growing, still expanding, really has some sustainable growth behind it and not just a, you know, fry pan, hot fire market that starts to fizzle out, if you will. If you've been checking out the national news of, you know, Austin, Texas, Boise, Idaho, just to name a couple, got extremely hot, especially after COVID, you know, with people moving and then, pushing the prices of real estate to really kind of unaffordable levels. And I've seen even 20% declines in the purchase prices from where they peaked. So I, you know, personally, I tend to stay around those stay away from those markets. You know, if you can get appreciation, great, but I'm all about cash flow. And the property needs to cash flow from day one, not under a lot of hypothetical if scenarios that if it, you know, appreciates 5, 6, 10% a year, and if rates go down, and if you can refinance, and if rents keep going up 15% a year, yada, 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 then in 2025, it will be a perfect cash flowing property. For me, it has to cash flow from day one, and I'd rather sit on the sidelines, wait for another good opportunity to come by, versus try to chase and, you know, go after a quick buck, so to speak. Now, for this particular market, I have not yet visited this on site. Definitely plan to hopefully here in 2023. Now they, as of yesterday, a 16-month toddler in the house and numerous other projects. If you follow me on Facebook or Instagram, the days of my wife and I just, you know, hopping in a car and going on a spur of the moment road trip or plane ride are long gone. You know, they're fun while it lasted, but hey, you know, things change. But definitely glad to be a father. Wouldn't give that up for, you know, anything in the world. But you know, like I said, life changes, schedules change. My son and my family are definitely number one priorities. Might rope it up into another road trip with them and visit. But like I said, still plan to check out this market here in 2023, but for sure in 2024. Now you might be listening to this. Well, geez, John, what market are you talking about? And this is actually Oklahoma City, as the name implies, down in Oklahoma. Now, I have followed this company, Table Investments, for about 3 years now. I hope to have a cool PDF done in my downloads section on my site in the next month or two, you know, on the long list of projects that I sometimes wish there was more than 24 hours in a day, but eventually I will get to it. But for now, for the intro of this podcast, just kind of want to go over a few of the highlights that I have found from my research that I liked about Oklahoma City, also liked about Table Investments, the company that I will have on here later in the podcast, and just we'll kind of go over some of the highlights that I found interesting. And I think anyone looking for a, shall we say, nice, stable, steady Eddie return type of market, I think that would be interested as well. Now, some of this is a little dated, and I say dated by, you know, year or so. So it's not like I'm reading quotes from 1990. But Oklahoma City is one of 14 American cities to gain at least 100,000 people since 2010. So obviously has had a large number of growth in over 10 years. Wasn't just a blip on a chart. Oklahoma City is now, again, this was actually at the end of 2021, the 22nd largest city in the United States. This is by population. Census data said that this was the sixth fastest growing city among the 25 largest cities by population. This was showing about 17% growth, and I think that was from the 2010 to the 2020 censuses that were done. Typically Oklahoma, you know, you might be thinking down south, Midwest, it's pretty much just oil, but it actually has a very large, thriving medical, finance, bioscience, manufacturing, among other facilities in this area too. Also has a large military connection with Tinker Air Force Base. You know, whether it's a pandemic or recession or, you know, whatever black swan seems to come along, you know, you hear a lot of stories in the news of manufacturers packing up or going out of business. Right, wrong, or indifferent, governments and military bases tend to always kind of stick around. So usually if you have at least one of those, typically you're kind of in the safe area, so to speak. Let's see here. There was about 1.4 million people in the Oklahoma City metro area, had about on average 1.5% annual growth. Again, this is a little dated, but many of the investment properties I've been had seen on Table Investments email newsletter could still get about $85,000 homes for, or that would still cash flow about $850 a month rent, or get the 1% rule that everyone seems to go after. Again, this is a little dated, so, you know, that same house is more like 125-ish, give or take, but still relatively reasonably priced, especially considering the median home price across the United States is about $400,000. Oklahoma as a state is actually pretty landlord-friendly. An interesting thing I found out about this market, and this is not the case everywhere, is if there is a single-family home and it's a rented to tenants and the tenant doesn't pay their rent, but they also don't pay their utility bills, the utility bills actually stay in the tenant's name. So you're not stuck with unpaid bills that the tenant would have left you. That actually stays in the tenant's name and follows them around. So that's another bonus for any landlord out there that wants to keep the tenants accountable and not get stuck with numerous unpaid bills from a tenant. Now, also in terms of land mass for how large Oklahoma City spreads out, it's actually one of the largest cities in the United States, similar to Jacksonville, Florida. In the last recession, and now keep in mind this is 2008, the Great Recession, I should say, there was only about an average 6% drop in housing prices in Oklahoma City. So this wasn't a Las Vegas, Nevada, or Miami, Florida, or, you know, pick your market there that had 20, 30, sometimes even high 40% price declines. So has been stable through recessions and also, you know, stable through even the big growth periods. Slow, steady 3% appreciation. Many Fortune 500 companies such as AT&T, Sonic, Dell, Hertz, Lowe's, Hobby Lobby are large employers and or are headquartered in Oklahoma City or have regional headquarters there as well. Property taxes for Oklahoma tend to be around 1%. So the property, you know, is valued at $100,000. You can budget for about $1,000 in property taxes. While I know a lot of people gush over and are rushing into Texas and Florida, what doesn't get as much attention as it should is the property taxes are a lot higher in those states. You know, it's not uncommon to see even upwards of 4 or 5% of the market value of the home as an annual property tax bill. So maybe on paper it looks good, but hey, if you're the owner of the property, you're going to have to be shelling out more for property taxes. Typically, in the, back to table investments, typically invest and stay in B-class areas, kind of some of the submarkets known as the Village, Northwest Oklahoma City, Bethany, and the Urban Core are some of the areas that table tends to stick with at the time of this recording. Also going down here, talk to... and... trying to read my chicken scratch here. Talked to a Caleb that was at Table Investments. I believe he was one of the maintenance coordinators. This was about 2 years ago. So again, a number of things I really liked about Table Investments, not just the market, always I look at, but also the company, what they charge, how they operate, etc. So they do $0 markup for supplies and maintenance. So if they, you know, buy a toilet to replace a faulty toilet, it's $200. You pay $200, just like it was from that they got their invoice from the wholesaler or Lowe's or wherever it was. They charge $300 for annual inspections, which is pretty much in line with a lot of other companies I've seen and other ones that I've worked with. Their reserves is actually fairly low. They only require about $300 per unit for reserve. So single family home, they collect $1,000 in rent. If there weren't any maintenance or bills that particular month, they would withhold or always have $300 in reserve. And then that additional $700 would be deposited into your bank account. 10% management fee, again, pretty standard. Kind of a range here, but typically the renewal fees are between $300 and $600. For the late fees, this can kind of vary, but usually for the late fees, $50 of that goes to Table Investments and the rest will go to the investor. So late fees aren't exactly an extra income source for you, not exactly an income source for them as well. Let's see here. They have no fees for eviction processing. Now, keep in mind, there is still some legal work. You know, maybe you have to pay some legal bills, you know, unpaid rent or the turnover of the units. Obviously, that you would still have to pay for, but they don't have an eviction processing fee. Also, the company uses AppFolio, which is a very helpful and very user-friendly tool that investors can log in, see their dashboards, see invoices, statements, copies of leases, etc. Just a little side note, this will actually tie into a future podcast down the line, but many password managers like Dashlane that I use, they can't differentiate between the sub addresses very well. So a lot of times with AppFolio, you'll see like table.appfolio.com or midsouth.appfolio.com, so on and so forth. So it's kind of like a sub address of AppFolio, and that's how, you know, each login is allocated to each property management company per se.
We'll be right back.
Are you somebody that's been dealing with betrayal trauma?
Are you somebody that has a really giant heart and you want to give back to this world, but you're not sure how you can do that because your trust has been broken? Well, I've got good news for you. I have the perfect podcast for you to come and listen to. It's called The Other Side of the Struggle, Healing from Betrayal Trauma by Erin Anderson Betrayal Trauma Coaching. Come learn how to trust again. Come learn how to open up that giant heart and heal from your betrayal trauma at The Other Side of the Struggle on all major platforms.
Now, investors, you know, this is kind of one of those love it or hate it areas. Investors can say, yep, I will accept Section 8, or I do not want to accept Section 8, and Tabe will work with that. They can also decide if they will accept pets or not. That is up to the investor as well. Also, just a relay, this is all notes that I have recorded and put together, and this is coming out here in early 2023. So as this goes into the abyss of the hundreds of thousands of podcasts that stay out there into perpetuity, if you're listening to this in 2026, 2028, or whatever, obviously a number of these things could change. This is just the most current info that I'm going after or have available at my disposal right now. Tabe also works with vetted contractors. They try to get bulk discounts and opt into preventive maintenance, like cleaning the gutters, an annual HVAC check to prevent costly maintenance fees from adding up. When I interviewed them in 2021, they managed a little over 200 properties. About 10 to 20 properties were getting added per month. And as you will see in or listen to on the podcast here, they are at around 400 properties. And this was at the end of 2022. So the company itself has had nice, steady growth, like many other property management companies and turnkey companies out there that I've worked with. So I like that as well. They do 12-month leases with a 90-day notice required for non-renewal. So there's plenty of time to, they know, hey, the tenant's moving out. They get notice in September. So they got 3 months of planning. So when the lease is up in December, then a new tenant can hopefully kind of move in right behind them. Let's see, month-to-month leases are available. The nice thing with that is whether it goes into renewal as a month-to-month, or if you even just want a little bit flexibility with the month-to-month, they take what the standard rent would be, and then they add $25 a month to it. So it could be a little extra cash flow there as well. Deposits that come in are typically deposited the first week of the following month. Again, pretty standard with a lot of property management and turnkey companies. So those are just kind of the highlights. I don't want to put you to sleep while I'm reading the notes that I put together since August of 2020. So now, again, this is just my opinion. I don't have a crystal ball. I've, you know, researched this market for a while. I personally think Oklahoma City could be like Memphis, Tennessee was nearly 20 years ago. If you talk to investors or even the real estate community per se, yeah, a lot of people knew about Memphis, home of Elvis, back in 2004, 2005, but not a lot of people really knew it as a rental market. And now I don't think you can go into a bigger pockets thread without seeing Memphis mentioned in some way, shape, or form. I bought my first property in Memphis almost 3 years ago. And just to give you an idea of how hot that market is, I get at least, I would say on a slow week, I get at least two emails or texts from wholesalers wanting to purchase my property. I always say no, or I throw out like 150% Zillow value, and that seems to shut them up and they don't call again. But there's still plenty of wholesalers behind them that want to buy into Memphis. And there's also institutional money moving into Memphis as well. So while it is next to impossible, at least from what I've seen, to get to the 1% rule in Memphis now, it is still pretty prevalent what I've seen in the listings for Oklahoma City, you know, without diving into the C minus minus class or getting into really rundown properties or less than desirable neighborhoods. So while many areas of Texas, just to the south of there, got a little overheated, like Austin, Houston, Dallas, Oklahoma City, or OKC seems to be kind of a slow and steady growth market with a decent cash flow. Even after 3 years, it still is not on a lot of people's radars. I was kind of watching like, well, is this going to be one of those markets? And then, well, gee, I wish I got into that earlier because now everyone knows about it and you can't find a property for under $200,000 or anything like that. Kind of like Kansas City or St. Louis, if you will, which have really increased in popularity over the last 4 or 5 years. So, like I said, I don't have a crystal ball, but I do really like this market. It has been on my radar for a number of years. Plan to invest in that, or excuse me, plan to visit still end of 2023 or 2024, depending on how plans line up. And definitely see this as, you know, one of the next markets to go into as well. So with that, that's the end of, you know, my notes and my little bit of an intro. So we'll get into the interview with Alyssa Dyer of Table Investments after a word from our sponsors. Have you ever wanted to invest like the wealthy and how the 1% do, but think it's out of reach for you? Do you desire a more abundant lifestyle, but think you can't afford it? If so, check out ECI Development. With over 20 years of international real estate experience, Mike Cobb and his team can help you truly diversify your portfolio and lifestyle. How about benefiting from a generational investment that can 10x your wealth or more with a teak hardwood parcel in Panama or Nicaragua? Maybe it'll even lead to residency options in the future. Perhaps you'd be interested in a beachfront condo for under $250,000, enjoying the beautiful sunsets off the Pacific Ocean. Maybe an eco-friendly tiny home for around $100,000. ECI's team can even help you get financing for these investments. To learn more, check out the show notes or go to wealthandfreedomnexus.com/ECI. Alyssa, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, you bet. So now maybe we'll just kind of jump right in. I, you know, gave my listeners a little intro on just what I've learned about, you know, the Oklahoma City market in general. But how did you, you know, get started or get into real estate back in the day?
I got in real estate in 2014. Okay. I was in school to do, you know, the whole pre-med thing and got almost through undergrad. Where you start applying and they have you do shadowing and whatnot to
beef up
your application and resume. And so as I started doing that, I realized that I super hated medical industry. So I kind of had a quarter life crisis where I'd worked so hard, you know, like 4.0 and the whole bit.
Yeah.
And so I dropped out and just bartended and was reading everything, trying to find something that... You know, like, okay, money was important to me, but also like medical field wasn't it. So I don't want to hate my life. So anyways, I came across Rich Dad Poor Dad, like I think so many other people have, and I was like, okay, I can do this. And didn't have money at the time to be an investor and hadn't really learned about how, like, I didn't know anything about terms and raising
sure.
money. So I was like, okay, I'll get into like a high paying sales job. So I've got money to invest. And so I did house hack and led to another house hack and, you know, started that way and then kind of started helping some friends get into investing. And then it kind of took off and became this whole, you know, company. But originally it was just, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad and wanted to do that. So did sales to come up with money so I could.
Okay. Very cool. So,
yeah.
And then with that, I know you said it was, you know, 2014, you kind of had this, well, I went for pre-med and I hate pre-med. So how long has Table Investments been around now and or been in business as a turnkey company?
So we started in 2017 formally, and I do make the clarification that we're not actually a turnkey company, which we had to kind of learn the hard way. We would get all these referrals from people in 2017 thinking that we'd like purchased properties and then fully remodel them. And we couldn't figure out why people had that idea, because we were like, okay, this is not on our website, it's not on anywhere on social media, but it's because people were like, oh, you're turnkey, so they had this expectation. Yeah, so that was super fun. So we had to like get on Bigger Pockets and be like, what is a turnkey company, and then do all this work to let people know that like that is not us. So
sure.
Yeah. So, but Table has been around since 2017. And then we started management. We brought that in-house at the end of 2019.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And since you mentioned that, I just kind of popped in my head. How did you come up with the name of Table Investments? Is there any story behind that? Or
No. So we, one Sunday, a bunch of my friends are business owners or, you know, doing the solopreneur thing. And so sometimes on Sundays, they would just come over and we'd all just kind of work and Postmates and do whatever. And so we had tried several other names. I can't remember what they are now. And they were all taken. And so we kept getting kicked back from Secretary of State. And so finally, yeah, somebody at the table was like, Table Investments is open. I was like, buy it. Don't, like, if Apple and Google, like Amazon, like they don't mean those. I don't care. Just pick a name so that we can go. So that's it. There's nothing, you know, I get people all the time who are like, is there some higher meaning about like deal at the table? And no, none of that. It just was available.
Okay. I was just curious. So yeah, no, I understand that. So now with the growth that you've been seeing, you know, since 2017, at this time we're recording in October 2022, I'm not 100% sure when this will be published yet, but at this moment, approximately how many doors are you managing?
We have around 400. I looked like a week ago. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think last time I spoke with the I should have had in front of me. There's someone else at the company I'd spoke to. I think you're at 350 at that time. So it's definitely growing since then.
Yeah, that's been, I mean, that's a challenge to figure out how do you grow? Cause we hear so much about quality. So there've been a couple of times where we've just had to be like, dude, wait list. We keep like, we can't bring any more on. So we just went through a little bit of like a growth pop. We're handling it.
Okay.
Which is reassuring. We're figuring out how to grow and scale a little faster now. Sure. But it's been challenging. Like I don't have formal education in like business development or, you know, any of that. So it's just been us kind of figuring it out as we go.
Sure. Understandable. So, and now, I've been following your, or been a subscriber to your newsletter for quite some time. And I know recently you just, I don't know if you want to say tiptoe or dabbling per se, but have gotten into short-term rentals in addition to long-term. How's that been going and what percentage of the table's portfolio is short-term versus long-term?
Very small percentage. So Kira is my like right hand. She was my first employee and like we partner on deals together. She has been at me for years about doing short-term rental and doing short-term rental. And it's a lot of work, like getting, because it is investing, but it's also the hospitality piece is critical. And so I love hospitality, but I've never trained hospitality. I've never, like, I don't own restaurants for a reason, you know?
Sure.
And so figuring that piece out was really hard, but I've had this dream hire kind of that I've been working on for a couple of years. And so I kept telling Kira, if that girl ever says yes and comes on with us, we'll do short-term rentals. Cause she's got 20 years experience in hospitality and has managed at a really high level and built teams and done, you know, all the stuff that I don't know how to do in the hospitality world. So she finally agreed to come on with us this year. And we are, you know, I just talked about like slow growth and short-term rental is that for us. We would rather for now have a small portfolio that's done very, very well than have, you know, bring on 200 units that are kind of doing okay. Like we're super, super proud of our metrics right now. So I think we've only got, I think we've got like 13 that are active and another 10 or 15 that are kind of in the pipeline getting set up.
Okay.
So it's been really fun and I love it, but that's definitely not dipping our toes in, as you had the right phrase.
Okay. definitely not a core business, more of a ancillary business basically. So.
Yeah. And the other piece is it's like, you know, the regulation, there's just so many unknowns. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to staff up and create this whole organization. It's easy to pivot when you're small, but when you've got a ton of employees and a ton of processes and then the city changes something, like we learned so much of that during COVID with the moratoriums, it's really hard to get a whole ship turned. So we want some of the dust to settle a little bit before we scale with that.
Okay. That makes sense.
This show is brought to you today by Lightbulb Podcasting. Are you a busy professional that needs to get more time back in their schedule? If you are a podcaster like me, you have enough on your plate. Why not outsource your podcast production? From editing, show notes, keywords, scheduling, volume balancing and editing, and creating audiograms, podcast production is another job in and of itself. That's why I use Lightbulb Podcasting. Get phenomenal support and an affordable price while you concentrate on growing your brand. Go to www.lightbulbpodcasting.com today to schedule an introductory call. Put your content in the spotlight.
Now, you had alluded to earlier and mentioned that you're, you know, very proud of your, you know, metrics and KPIs across the board, and maybe just concentrating on the long-term rental piece of this. What is your, you know, occupancy rate, and did that get affected much with the COVID hysteria?
Yeah, so that's been really weird to watch, like very, very weird to watch. The KPIs on the long-term side are all over the place. You know, so we'd have people during COVID who are like, oh, what's your eviction rate? And I just told them, like, I could brag to you that it's less than 1% for sure, because it is.
Right.
But also, we've gotten, you know, tens of, I mean, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars in CARES Act money.
Oh, okay.
That's prevented those evictions. So that was really weird. And then we've noticed, so the CARES Act money finally ran out several weeks ago. And so we've kind of been preparing our owners that we don't totally know what to expect. We're either going to see tenants like who've had money the whole time and they actually start paying it, or we're going to see probably a really big influx of evictions because they're expecting to show up to court and get that relief money and then be surprised when it's not there.
Gotcha.
So there have been more legal aids, you know, at court. It's been a little, it's just been weird. So anyways, our eviction rate is still low, like less than 1%, but I have a hard time hanging my hat on that. Delinquencies are around 10%, but that's skewed again too, because we have CARES Act money that is, it was promised before it ran out. And so it's, you know, if we take that into account, it's actually closer to 2-3%, but till that money hits our bank account, we still have to have that on the board as lost income. But leasing is still really hot, just since overall affordability is a challenge. We put houses up for rent and we're leasing them. I think our average is like 4 days, 5 days.
Oh, wow.
Like it's very, very, very fast. So those are all, you know, really strong. Delinquency is a little high, but kind of fake high. And then eviction and leasing time are abnormally low. But again, kind of, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I don't know how much of that is our performance versus the market just being what it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm not going to name names or point fingers, but there's some other companies out there too, where they brag about, oh, our occupancy rate is, you know, 98%, but then they fail to mention, well, we've had these five tenants over here and they've been living there for the last 5 months. They just haven't been paying rent, but hey, it's occupied. So, you know, you
there's
can
a lot.
Kind of split hairs there.
There's a lot of that. And so we just try to, like to be transparent with clients and let them know, like, hey, these are the numbers, but really beyond just looking at that number and being impressed or unimpressed, like, do you know what questions to ask around what that number is? Because that's, in my opinion, way more important.
Agreed. So, okay. Now, you know, we don't have to go into all the, you know, legalese and all the statutes and everything like that. But generally speaking, I mean, I know some people are familiar with California, New York, New Jersey, Illinois, just to name a few, very tenant-friendly states, and they have professional tenants. How is Oklahoma? Are they more of a landlord-friendly state, or how does their laws protect property owners as well as landlords?
Yeah, landlord, we're for sure more of a landlord-friendly state. Really, as long as you are following the statutes, doing, you know, crossing T's and dotting I's, you're normally going to get a judgment in your favor. You know, the judge is going to say, yes, I will, you know, evict. I try to not use industry jargon too much. So it's been a little more challenging. There are more legal aids at the courthouse now. And so that's, for people who don't know, it's just where the tenant shows up. And then there are attorneys there who are working essentially pro bono and saying, hey, I will represent you on this case. It's been less. So for the most part, it's saying, okay, we're not going to say, yes, we're evicting, and no, we're not. We're going to say, okay, tenant, you're saying you only need 2 more weeks to get out of the house. We'll grant you that 2 weeks and then automatic judgment in 2 weeks. So we're still getting the rulings in our favor. It's just a little more grace around timeline or term, like basically terms, like technicalities. They're trying to work with the tenant a little more.
Okay.
But yeah, very, very landlord friendly. Generally, we tell our owners it's going to cost less than $500 end to end to get your eviction done.
Okay. Yeah. I think $500 in California, that gets you a meeting,
like probably gas for the week.
In the thousands or tens of thousands to evict someone. So now, like you mentioned here, I'm bigger pockets as well as I myself. And, you know, I've been, you know, researching and talked to many, you know, property owners, turnkey companies, real estate property management companies, et cetera. And I think a lot of people are familiar with, you know, Memphis, Kansas City, Dallas, some of the more common ones. Oklahoma City doesn't, you know, kind of hit a lot of people's radar. But what would you say to anyone looking at investment properties or, you know, getting an investment property? Why should they look at Oklahoma versus some of the, you know, quote, hot markets, so to speak?
Man, this question's always been a little bit of a grain of salt because I like that we're a little bit of a secret. It keeps, like, I like that we don't have a ton of institutional money. We don't have a lot of attention. It keeps our prices reasonable. So I always feel a little torn when I do like podcasts and stuff because I know that I'm bringing more attention to us, which we need for our business. But
yeah, but not so much that BlackRock buys up an entire, you know, suburb of Oklahoma. So
yeah, 100%. The other, our real estate community is just cool. I didn't realize that until I started meeting other people, like in other states, but it's super common. You know, if somebody calls and interviews us and, you know, to hire us and we're on the phone and I'm just feeling like it's not a good fit, it's super common for me to send a referral to one of my competitors and then they'll do the same with us. Yeah. So, and then like sharing contractors and just kind of getting what you need if you get in a bind is super cool, like from the business owner and investor side of things. And I've learned that in other markets, that is not at all the norm. You know, it's very much so like, I spent 20 years building this. Who do you think you are to even blink in the direction of asking me for help? So I like that. It just makes it easier to get things done. It makes it easier to know like what holes you're walking into before you get there. So I like it. I like it a lot. Insurance isn't crazy. Taxes isn't crazy. Like we're middle of the road.
All right. And yeah, I'm guessing in at the time of this recording, you know, obviously Hurricane Ina just hit Florida. And I know some people didn't have flood insurance and some that did are, you know, paying outrageous premiums. I think I'm sure there's probably tornadoes just like everywhere in the Midwest, but there isn't anything, you know, hurricane wise or earthquake wise that's going to, you know, be a recurring theme.
There's some areas, not most of the, in the areas that we sell, it's not really needed. So some areas will have some earthquakes and then tornadoes are obviously a thing. So those keep our insurance premiums around 1% of the purchase price. Our roofs need replaced more frequently than other markets, just the hail damage from the storms that hit us in the spring. So that's kind of a thing that we tell people about. Every once in a while, flood insurance, but most of that stuff is so nominal that, you know, like it's not going to be like California or Florida or these huge markets that just like seem to always have something
exactly
destroying their state.
So, all right. And then with that, you mentioned like the hail, and I know two of my properties, investment properties have metal roofs, and I've been seeing that come more and more. Have you been, you know, either on the management side or the acquisition side, have you seen more investors getting metal roofs, or is it still kind of the asphalt shingles still? Or
we haven't, we still mostly see composition. So asphalt shingles. It would just be so hard. Like it would be very annoying as somebody living in a metal roof in Oklahoma, just to listen to it. And I'm not super, super educated, but when I've talked to roofers about it, that's kind of the general answer they've given me is that most of them that they install, the people aren't happy with it. So we haven't explored it a ton.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So, all right. Good to know. Well, that's actually, I learned a number of things and didn't even know about the metal roof. I just think about, you know, hey, it prevents hail. Cost. It doesn't need to be replaced. But it's like, never thought about the noise so much on that. So,
Right.
Well, as we wrap this up, Alyssa, I want to thank you again for taking time out of your schedule to educate my listeners. If anyone was interested in learning, you know, more about Oklahoma City or wanted to, you know, purchase an investment property or have, you know, table and manage a property, maybe they already have in the area, what's the best way to reach out?
For sure, either website or maybe I'll say Instagram. So website is table.investments. If you just want to learn about Oklahoma City, we do have a couple blog posts that are actually helpful, just about like stats in Oklahoma City and kind of how we operate.
Okay.
And then on Instagram, we're just table. Our handle is at Table Investments.
Gotcha. Table Investments. All right. And for all those listening and, you know, running on the treadmill, walking the dog, or wherever the case may be, all those resources will be in a clickable format in the show notes for you. So again, Alyssa, thanks for joining us and educating us on the Oklahoma City market.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.